स्यादौ कुर्वन् गीतामृतं ददौ लोकत्रयोपकाराय तस्मै कृष्णात्मने नमः। हरे कृष्णा। वेलकम बैक टू आवर भगवद्गीता भक्तिशास्त्री कोर्स क्लास सीरीज। सो टुडे वी विल डिस्कस द फोर्थ चैप्टर। वी आर कंक्लूडिंग द फर्स्ट सेक्शन ऑफ द फोर्थ चैप्टर एंड देन वी विल मूव ऑन टू द सेकंड सेक्शन। So we discussed about why Krishna appears. So at one level, Krishna appears to give us, to teach dharma and to establish order over here. Krishna teaches and establishes dharma. That is the first section. But then we discussed dharma doesn't mean just establishing order over here. Dharma also means is setting up order over here so that people can come out of this material world and return back to him. So for that, one has to have tattvataha understanding of Krishna. So now let us move forward and look at 4.10. So now in 4.9, Krishna has said that the people who understand me in truth will come back to me. Now in this verse, after this, he explains what are the obstacles to understanding him in truth. So three obstacles he mentioned, and Prabhupada elaborates them profoundly in his purport. So we will look at those three obstacles, and then once we become free from these three obstacles, how we can attain the shelter of Krishna. That's what Krishna tells. Mitaraga bhaya krodha manmaya mam upashritah bhavo gyana tapasah utamad bhavam agatah. So vita means to become free from. Raga bhaya krodha. Raga is attachment, bhaya is fear, and krodha is anger born of frustration, anger. So when a person becomes free from these three things, then manmaya, the person can fix the mind on me. Mamu parashritaha, that person can take shelter of me. So this is the first time in the Bhagavad Gita Krishna is using the word ashritaha for mam ashritaha, to take shelter of me. This will come again and again in the Gita, but it's the first reference, mam upashritaha. And then what? Bhavo gyana tapasa. So Krishna is telling that this path which I am telling you, of taking fixing the mind on me and taking shelter of me, actually many people have done that in the past. Bahavo is many. Jnana tapasa, by the austerity of knowledge. Puta, they have become purified, and madbhava magataha, they have attained my bhav, they have attained divine emotion for me. Bhava refers to emotion. So they have attained transcendental love for me. So Krishna says, Vita raga bhaya krodha. So, the same phrase, Vita raga bhaya krodha, had come in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna was talking about Rita Pragya Muni. So he says, Dukheshwanadignamana sukheshu vigatasbruha Vita raga bhaya krodha Sitadhir muni ruchyate. So Krishna talks about that in answer to Arjuna's question about का भाषा हितप्रज्ञस्य का भाषा समाधिस्थस्य केशव स्थितिधि किं प्रभाषेत। सो दैट 2.54 वाज अर्जुनास क्वेश्चन। ही हैड फोर क्वेश्चंस। 2.55 वाज द आंसर का भाषा, व्हाट आर द कैरेक्टरिस्टिक्स, एंड 56 एंड 57 वाज द आंसर किं प्रभाषेत। सो देयर आल्सो वीतराग भय क्रोध वाज देयर। सो देयर प्रभुपाद एक्सप्लेन अटैचमेंट एवर्जन एंड वीतराग भय क्रोध। द डिवोटी व्हेन सर्विंग द लॉर्ड इज नॉट attached, neither frustrated, not fearful. So it's courageous. So now Prabhupada gives a deeper explanation of these three factors in this purport. So let's look at this. So first, Prabhupada explains raga. So what he says is, when people are in raga, in material, people who are attached to the worldly conception of life are so absorbed in material, it is almost impossible for them to understand how the Supreme can be a person. So, here Srila Prabhupada makes the first point is, first he says that when we are too materially conscious, then we think of everything in terms of matter. So first problem is that, when we are attached to matter, we don't want to think about Lord. You think, actually I am enjoying over here. I am happy over here. Why do I need anything else? Why do I need God at all? I am happy. So, one doesn't care for God if one is very attached. The only reason one may care for God while one is attached is if one feels that by that God can help me enjoy over here better. Then only one will care for God. But then that is not really caring for God. That is caring for the things of the world and using God as a tool to the things of this world. As Prabhupada would say, when we ask God for bread, that shows our love for bread, not love for God. So, like that, that raga prevents us from manmaya. We may pray to God, but even when we are praying to God, we are not thinking about God. We are thinking about the things of the world which God may give us. So this prevents us from upashrita. There may be some level of religion that is being practiced, but upashrita, taking shelter of Krishna, is not possible. And then Prabhupada says that raga bhaya krodha. So they can't think of spiritual form. They think form means material form. So people in general keep the same bodily idea in mind when they are informed of the personal form of the Lord. For such materialistic men, the form of the gigantic material manifestation is supreme. So they think that there is nothing beyond matter. And if there is a God at all, then that God is transcendental. That God cannot be personal. Because they assume that form and personality are characteristic of material realm only. So this raga creates such an attachment, they don't think about God. And when they do think about God, why do they think? Because their raga is frustrated. They become attracted to the forms of this world and they found those forms are disappointing. They try to develop relationships in the world and they found that disappointing. So by all this, they start feeling there must be something higher in life. There must be something which must be beyond this. But because they are so averse to material things. So what Prabhupada says is, because they are too materially absorbed, the conception of retaining the personality after liberation from matter frightens them. So that is the Prabhupada's explanation of bhaya over here. When they are informed about spiritual life is also individual and personal, they become afraid of becoming persons again, and so they naturally prefer a kind of merging into the impersonal void. So here Srila Prabhupada is making the point that when we project the material conception in the absolute, then we think, oh, I have to form, whenever I try to form relationships, it leads to misunderstanding, that leads to heartbreaks. So if I have a relationship in the spiritual realm also, that will also lead to misunderstanding, that will also lead to heartbreaks. Better I don't want any relationships, let's forget it. What do I want? Shanti, shanti, shanti. So based on one's materialistic conceptions, intellectually and emotionally, one recoils from a personal conception of the absolute. Intellectually, in one's conceptions, the form and matter are rooted together. People can't think how there can be form without matter. How there can be spiritual form. Yeah, matter means form. So if form is not there, then that means if matter is there, form has to be there. And if form is there, matter has to be there. How can the two be separated? You just can't conceive of a spiritual form. Their idea of spirit is not just spiritual, their idea of spirit is primarily anti-material. So, they can't think of spirit in its own glory. They think that by negating matter will get spirit. So, if matter has form, then spirit should be formless. So, with this conception, they cannot get a personal understanding. And they remain fearful of the personal aspect. So, that's why they cannot do manmaya mam parshuta. They cannot think of Krishna and take shelter of Krishna. Because of their fear of the personal conception of relationships in the spiritual realm. And then, after that, there is krodha. So Prabhupada says, what is krodha? Being embarrassed by so many theories and by contradictions of various types of philosophical speculation, they become disgusted or angry and foolishly conclude that there is no supreme cause and that everything is ultimately void. Ultimately void. So here, krodha refers not just to anger. Here, krodha refers to something deeper. It refers to the anger which comes from frustration. When one can't understand what is the ultimate truth of life. These people say this is right. These people say this is right. Some people say that God is like this. Some people say God is like that. Some people say God is like that. Well, what is the truth? How can I find it out? I can't find it out. No, everybody presents their philosophy very persuasively. And everybody seems to be right. So what? How do I find what is right? Better don't get into this business only. Better forget the whole thing. And they say, what is the absolute truth? Ultimately everything is a void. So they just don't care. That krodha is a result of the of skepticism. So when one is excessively skeptical and one is not ready to make a commitment to find out what is the truth, then one falls prey to this krodha. So when Prabhupada was asked about this skepticism, Prabhupada says skepticism means rascalism. Why? He said just because you can't find the truth, that doesn't mean nobody can't find the truth. That doesn't mean that nobody is capable of finding the truth. Prabhupada says that, yes, just like a fox, when it sees the grapes, and it sees the grapes are too far away. So he says sour grapes. The grapes are sour. So like that, we can't understand the truth, so we say there is no truth only. So how do we know what is the truth? See, there is one truth, there are many paths to the truth. And it's not necessary that there has to be one thing right and everything has to be wrong. There is, truth is like a pyramid. So progressively, we get clearer and clearer understanding as we move forwards. But essentially, there's inner transformation that happens. We become purified. We start developing attraction to Krishna. So in that way, there is a process by which we can verify. Now for example, if somebody says that, oh, there are so many different therapies. There are naturopathy, there is Ayurveda, there is allopathy, there is homeopathy, there are so many paths like that. And different doctors give entirely different explanations of, you know, what is the disease and how it can be cured. What should I do? Better don't get into this medicine business only. Yes, I won't go to any doctor because there's no way I can find out what is right. So if somebody thinks like this, then who is the loser? It is that person who is the loser. That person continues to stay diseased and that person continues to stay suffering in material existence. So that in a diseased condition. Similarly, yes, there are different spiritual paths, but there is an objective criteria. They are all meant ultimately to heal. And the way we understand whether a path is right or not, we use our intelligence to analyze, but then we invest our consciousness. If we get purified, we get spiritually healed, then we understand this medicine works. So, like that, if we experience benefit from our spiritual practice, then we should practice it. And that's how we move forward in our spiritual life, by practicing. Now, Vitaraga Bhaya Krodha. So, then Prabhupada starts referring here to hippies. This last class of men take to the shelter of some kind of intoxication and their affective hallucinations are sometimes accepted as spiritual vision. Affective hallucination means somebody sees something. So Prabhupada, somebody told Prabhupada, you know, when I was taking LSD, I used to get these kind of visions. Prabhupada says, stop taking LSD, the visions will go away. So no, he's so shocked, he was completely deflated. He said, he thought his visions are such a wonderful thing and I'm getting visions, I'm a special person. Prabhupada said, you cannot get spiritual visions by drugs. Actually, spiritual vision you will get by when you become purified. So, actually many times in that, when Prabhupada was in the lower East Side and then Haithashbari, first in New York and then in San Francisco. So, if somebody went high on LSD, then that person would be considered to be a LSD saint. You know, a person who is like a saint has some extraordinary vision. And if suppose saint has gone to Samadhi, and while in Samadhi, the saint is acting in a particular way, maybe speaking certain things, dancing madly, whatever. So everybody stands there reverentially. Oh, okay. This person gone to ecstasy. So like that, this person is a saintly ecstasy. So people would think that if somebody has gone high on LSD, and that person can speak any nonsense. Oh, these are the revelations of the saint coming out. People would say, oh, LSD saint. So Prabhupada said, this is not sensible. Anybody takes drugs and anybody gets any ideas, how can they be considered spiritual vision? So, Prabhupada says one has to get all these three. One has to get rid of all three stages of attachment to the material concept, material world. All three stages of attachment. What are the negligence of spiritual life? This happens when there is raga. Fear of a personal, spiritual personal identity, that is bhaya. And the conception of a void that arises from frustration in life, that is krodha. So, all these three, when one gives up, then one can practice spiritual life sincerely. Now, when Krishna tells us this path, he tells us that many other people have already practiced it. Bhavo jnana tapasa. So, Krishna will talk about this once again in 4.15 also, when he will say many others have practiced it and they have become liberated. And Krishna has referred to this earlier also in 3.20. Karmanaiva hi samsiddhim astita janakardaya lokasangrahame vapi sampashyan kartum arhasi. So he says, karmanaiva hi samsiddhim. By karma itself one has attained perfection. Karmanaiva hi samsiddhim astita janakardaya Who are the people who attain perfection like this? Janak Adayaha. There are many others, Janak and others, who have attained perfection. Similarly, Krishna is saying, Bhavo Gyana Tapasa. Many others have attained perfection. So this is giving an assurance to Krishna. Just like if somebody says, a doctor says, I'm a specialist doctor. And, I do brain surgery. So, yes, doctor, what is your experience? How many patients have you operated on? Oh, you have the honor of being my first patient. I don't want that honor, doctor. I'll go to some other doctor, isn't it? So, if somebody is absolutely new and it is our life that is at risk, we wouldn't want to put our life to risk like that. We would want to say, okay, this experienced doctor. And many people have done the surgery and people have become cured. So, like that, Kyana Tapas Bahavo. Many have become purified. Now, Krishna uses an interesting compound word over here, Gyana Tapasa. So tapasa means austerity, jnana means knowledge. So what is that? Jnana tapasa mean? The austerity of knowledge. So actually, hearing about Krishna and understanding Krishna's glories, that can be an austerity sometimes. Actually, it purifies us and eventually it fills us with great joy when we start understanding Krishna's glories. But initially or transitionally, it may happen that for some time, we may find the glories of Krishna annoying, irritating, boring, draining, bewildering, a different emotion that can go on. Annoying. Why Krishna is so good? I want my own glories to broadcast. Why hear about Krishna's glories only? How boring. The same things again and again. How many times are draining? Very irritating. What is this pastime? It doesn't make sense. Why does Krishna act like this? So, Janma Karma Chami Divyam, the pastimes of Krishna, hearing about them can sometimes be an austerity. Of course, many times we find that if hearing pastimes are not an austerity, we enjoy hearing pastimes as long as they are new pastimes. The same pastimes repeated once, twice, thrice, four times. Now it's enough. Isn't there some new pastimes there? Please tell me some new pastimes. That attitude comes up. So, but if the pastimes are new and they are entertainingly told, we like them. But tattvataha, understanding the tattva and then understanding the pastime. That requires austerity. So, Jnana Tapasa. But Krishna assures us that if we do Jnana Tapasa, what will the result? Puta. We'll become purified. So, hearing about Krishna's glories purifies us. And when we become purified, then our original natural attraction to Krishna becomes revived by that purification. So, purify and revive. Revive our attraction. That is the conclusion. Mat bhava magataha. They attain bhava for me. So Prabhupada connects this bhava with the 9 stages of bhakti just talked about in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The 8th among them being bhava. So adau shraddhartha sadhu sangha. So we know the spiritual life begins first with faith. Then there is sadhu sangha. We come in the association of devotees. Then the devotees tell us, please chant Hare Krishna, bhajana kriya. Then bhajana kriya, what happens? Start experience transformation, our bad habits fall away, anartha nivritti syat. Tato nishtha ruchis tatha. Then nishtha, our faith becomes strong. Just like when we take a treatment and we become cured by the treatment, the disease subsides and we start thinking, oh, this treatment works, nishtha. Then after ruchis tatha, then asakti. Ruchi is taste, asakti is attachment. Just like we discussed in the lecture of instruction, how initially sugarcane juice doesn't taste sweet for a jaundiced person. But as the person gets cured, then first of all, the person receives feeling goes away. So, nishtha, yes, this treatment works. But after that, hey, this sugarcane juice is so sweet. I want to take it more. So, nishtha, ruchi, asakti. So, attachment comes up. And then bhava. Bhava means we start becoming, we not only feel nice when we chant, when we remember Krishna, when we serve Krishna, but along with that bhava, we feel affection, positive spiritual affection for Krishna. And then bhava, and then finally comes prema. Prema is spontaneous spiritual love for Krishna. And then what is it? Tataha prema vidanchati. Sadhana sadhakanam ayam premna. Pradur bhave bhavet kramaha. Sadhakanam, for the seekers, ayam premna. This prema pradur bhave bhavet kramaha. That step by step, this love will come gradually. And this is Prabhupada quoting Bhakti Swami Sindhu. And the correlation is bhava. Madbhava magataha. What is that madbhava? Krishna say referring to that is a person will attain love for me. So when we give up the obstacle, when we put aside the conception that act as obstacles, raga bhaya krodha, and still surrender to Krishna, then we become purified. So, madbhavamagataha. Now, let us look at the next verse. So, here we start the next section of the Bhagavad Gita, and this is one of the most important verses. So, here the second section is, Krishna is the goal and creator of all paths. Now, when I am giving sections, you know, no acharya has very specifically stated that this verse to this verse is this section, this verse is to this verse is this section. There have been given some outlines by Chakravarti Pad, Baldev Vidyabhushan. So different devotees may classify the sections of the Bhagavad Gita in different ways. So this is something which is not integral to the text. That is something which we create as a framework for our own understanding. So there may be different Bhagavad Gita teachers who may analyze the Gita sections into different ways. And that is perfectly okay as long as it gives us a continuity of understanding and clarity of understanding. So as long as that happens, the sections can be given in different ways. So here, Krishna is the goal and creator of all paths. So now what is the connection between the first and second section? First, Krishna teaches and establishes dharma. What is dharma? Dharma involves the practice of religion so that one becomes purified. So now for this purification, there are multiple processes. Now, Krishna has actually recommended here, manmaya mam upashrita, take shelter of me and practice bhakti yoga and come back to me. But not everybody wants to practice bhakti yoga. There are other processes also. So what about those different processes? What happens to those who practice those different processes? That Krishna will discuss in this section. And that's what we will start now. So Krishna, right in the beginning, gives us first a principle. The principle of what we should do. Or how we should understand these different processes. So, ye tha maam prapadyante, tam tathaiva bhajamyaham, amvartamana vartante, manushyapartha sarvishaha. So, ye yatha, as in what way, those who in whatever way, maam prapadyante, they surrender unto me. So, this prapadyante is related with the previous verse, it's upashrutaha. People take shelter of me. So, different people surrender unto me in different ways. In whatever way they surrender, tam tathaiva bhajamyaham. I reward them accordingly. Tam sathaiva. Accordingly, I reward them. And mama vartama nuvartante. That actually, people follow my path. Mama vartama, vartama is path. Anuvartante is to follow. Manushyaha partha sarvashaha. Sarvashaha is adjective that all people follow my path. So all people follow my path. And I reward people according to how they surrender to me. That means there are actually two distinct sections in this verse. We'll look at these two sections and then we'll look try to understand what is the correlation between the two. Now significantly, generally impersonalists like to quote the second part of this verse, whereas Vaishnavas and Srila Prabhupada frequently quote the first part. So first part is the principle of reciprocity. As different people surrender unto me, the Lord rewards accordingly. That means the Lord is reciprocal. The Lord is not absolutely like a stone. You know, whatever anybody does, the Lord will stay the same. The Lord reciprocates. So how does He reciprocate? Yatha maam prapadyante. So Vishwanatha Thakur explains beautifully in his purport, and Prabhupada also points to this, that those who consider the Lord's activities, birth and activity, janma karma, if they think that janma karma is divya, oh, the Lord's activities and appearance are transcendental, those who think my activities should be transcendental, so Krishna makes their activities transcendental. That means what? Krishna purifies them. And when they become purified, then they become liberated, they also start living and acting in the transcendental platform. So those who accept Krishna's activities to be transcendental, their activities become transcendental. So, those who consider Krishna's activities to be material, their activities remain material. Those who think that Krishna is just, what is this Krishna? You know, just some historical character or some mythological character. So they are materialistic, their activities also stay materialistic. Krishna says, okay, you think of him materialistically, then you continue on the cycle of birth and death. So those who think of Krishna in a monistic way, in a Mayavadi way, I think that actually Krishna is a temporary manifestation of impersonal Brahman. So that is also an offensive conception. So they are too much focused on material conception only. Because what is happening is, they are assuming that all forms are material, so they are not broken free from the fetter of matter. Fetter of matter, fetter is a shackle. Because they are not broken free from the fetter of matter, so they stay on in material existence. And they stay on in material existence, then they also suffer. So Krishna says that as people approach me with whatever conception, I reward accordingly. I reciprocate accordingly. Tamsathaiva bhajamyaham. Mama vartamanu vartante. Now, so this is the first part. The different people, I reciprocate accordingly. This will be expanded later on in the Bhagavad Gita and we'll discuss it that time also as we move forward in the flow. But mama vartamanu vartante. That all people follow my path. Now this is verse is often mistranslated as all paths lead to me. Now if you look at this verse, mama vartamanu vartante manushya partha sarvashah. So now if you see sarvashah is close to manushya. So sarvashah, all people are on my path, mama vartama. Now if you suddenly move sarvashah to vartama, all paths lead to me, it doesn't make a proper grammatical sense. Of course, some people argue that there is a figure of speech in called transferred epithet, where adjective is moved away from a noun to another noun. So like, there goes the traveler on the weary path. The weary is tired, so that it's not the path that is tired, the traveler is tired. So like there, some people say that this is a transferred epithet example. But the point is, Krishna is very here talking in a very analytical tone. And if we see, if it was just a transferred epithet, if all paths were ultimately to lead to him, then how do we understand? Very categorical verses. Like say Krishna has said in 3.31-32 that those who have faith, they will come to me. Those who don't have faith, they will fall back. So if all paths were lead to Krishna, then what about such verses which clearly delineate two paths and two destinations? So two conceptions, two destinations. So there's 9.25 also very categorical. Yanti devarta devan, pitrini yanti pitravata, bhutani yanti bhutejya. So, Krishna is talking four different conceptions or four different objects of worship and four different destinations. So, the idea that mam vartamanu vartante manushya partha sarvashya refers to all paths lead to the same goal, that cannot be sustained by comparison with other verses in the Gita. And so, scripturally, grammatically also, it doesn't make sense. Then, contextually from the whole message of the Gita, it doesn't make sense. And logically also, if we look at it, it doesn't make sense. If whatever anybody does, the people are going to come to Krishna, then what does it mean? Then it means that actually Arjuna doesn't need to fight. Because whether Arjuna fights or doesn't fight, ultimately everybody is on Krishna's path and everybody will come back to Krishna only. So Prabhupada asks a simple question that if whatever we do, we are going to go back to Krishna, then why does Krishna have to speak the Bhagavad Gita at all? Why does Krishna have to persuade Arjuna to choose any particular course of action? He doesn't have to. Therefore, this particular idea that all paths lead to the same goal is not a valid translation of this verse. Then what does this verse actually mean? What does it mean that all people are on my path? It means something important. That it means, firstly, that actually whatever a person is attracted to, actually that person is attracted to a manifestation of Krishna. So for example, now if we consider all of existence to be like a massive expressway. For some people, so in that expressway, Krishna is transcendental, then there is goodness, passion, ignorance. And different people are attracted to different things. So, when they are attracted to different things, what does it mean that they are attracted to? Some people are attracted to the beauty of the opposite sex, some people are attracted to learning, some people are attracted to the alcohol and intoxication. This is an example of passion, goodness and ignorance attractions. So when they are attracted like this, what does it mean? Actually, all these attractions are ultimately having the capacity to attract because they contain a spark of Krishna's opulence. This we will discuss in 10.41 when you come to 10th chapter. Yadyat vibhuti matsattvam srimadurjitam evava tatta deva avagachattvam mamatejoamsi sambhava. That everything that is beautiful, it has this attractive capacity because it possesses a spark of Krishna's splendor. Now, if somebody says that the beauty of the opposite sex is also the beauty of Krishna, then what is wrong with getting attracted to the beauty of the opposite sex? Actually, Yes, it is ultimately by Krishna's arrangement that even the opposite sex is beautiful. But that attraction doesn't connect us with Krishna. That the spark comes from the fire, but is this attraction, the spark, taking us to the fire, or is it taking us away from the fire? That we have to see. Prabhupada writes in Chaitanya Charitamrita purport that some Mayavadis say that actually everything is the experience of Brahman. So somebody, if that person drinks alcohol, then that person is also experiencing Brahman. Prabhupada says yes, that person may be experiencing Brahman, but that experience of Brahman doesn't purify. That experience of Brahman doesn't elevate. Experience of Brahman putrefies and degrades. Therefore, actually, when Krishna says all people are on my path, means actually they are attracted to different manifestations of me. But whether that attraction is taking them towards me or away from me, that will vary. So some attractions take us away from Krishna, some attractions take us towards Krishna. But all people are on my path. They are, in that sense, attracted to me. Like Prabhupada, when he asked George Harrison to write a foreword for his book, Krishna. So at that time, George Harrison had a generic understanding of Krishna consciousness. So he wrote very nicely, insightfully, that everyone is attracted to Krishna. Some people know it, some people don't. As Prabhupada also said that in the Rasleela chapter, in his rendition of the Rasleela chapter in Krishna book, Prabhupada says everybody is dancing. Some people are dancing in Mahamaya and some people are dancing in Yoga Maya. In Yoga Maya, they are loving Krishna, pleasing Krishna, and they are happy thereof. And those who are dancing in Mahamaya, they are in illusion and they are becoming more and more miserable. So in this way, Mama Vartamanu Vartante, all people are on my path. Now Prabhupada concludes by saying, and if you are attracted to different, these separated sparks of Krishna, rather than being attracted to the sparks, let us be attracted to the whole. So whatever we are attracted to, we will get that if we turn towards Krishna. So therefore he says that, he quotes this verse 2:3:10 from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Akamah sarva kamo va moksha kamo daradhi tibrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. So what is he saying? That ultimately whatever we want, we can get it from the Supreme Lord. So instead of worshipping others, we should simply worship the Supreme Lord. Akamah, if I have no desires, sarva kama, if I have many, all different kinds of desires. Or if I have moksha kama, if I have the desire for liberation, still, if I am broad-minded, udaradhi, if I am adequately intelligent, then what should I do? Yajeta purusham param, tivrena bhakti yogena, with tivra bhakti yoga, with intense bhakti yoga, with one-pointed, what I should do? Yajeta purusham param, let me worship the Supreme Lord, let me worship the Absolute Truth. So when I understand that actually, whatever I'm attracted in this world, it's simply a manifestation of Krishna's all attractiveness. And instead of separately seeking all those things, let me become attracted to Krishna. And by that attraction to Krishna, by that worship of Krishna, let me seek those things. I'll get the sparks also if Krishna is merciful. And Krishna, part of Krishna's plan. But more than the spark, I'll get the whole. When I get the whole, I'll become supremely happy. So, you know, we can either choose to have infinite longings, or we can choose longing for the infinite. Infinite longings means, oh, I long for this, I long for that, I long for that, I long for that. There are so many things I long for, and this longing knows no end. So like that, after I get a new watch, then I want a new cell phone, then I want a new dress, then I want a new car, then I want a new house, then I want a new spouse. And like that, it just goes on and on and on. There's no end to it. So I can have infinite longings, or we can have longing for the infinite. We redirect our desires. All these things that are attracting me is contain a spark, but Krishna is the whole. So let me long for the infinite. So then, tivrena bhakti yogena, we intensely serve Krishna, intensely love Krishna. Then we will become purified. Then we will attain the supreme perfection of life. Let's go to the next verse now. Now, Krishna will describe, okay, if Krishna, ultimately all paths are, all people are on his path, then why don't people worship him directly? So if, actually, it is he who is ultimately the rewarder, and all people are on his path, then why don't people worship him directly? So Krishna explains it in the next verse. Kaṅkṣantaḥ karmaṇām siddhim yajanta iha devataḥ. Shipram himanushe loke सिद्धिर भवति कर्मजा. सो कांक्षंतः, कांक्षंतः मीन्स हैंकरिंग, डिजायरिंग, कर्मणाम सिद्धिम, सक्सेस इन देयर वर्क. सो हियर कर्म रेफर्स टू फ्यूचर एक्टिविटी, मटेरियल एक्टिविटीज. अजंत इह देवतः, इह देवतः मीन्स द गॉड्स ऑफ दिस वर्ल्ड. अजंत, दे वर्शिप द गॉड्स ऑफ दिस वर्ल्ड. एंड व्हाट हैपेंस, क्षिप्रम हि मानुषे लोके, क्षिप्रम क्विकली, मानुषे लोके, इन दिस मटेरियल, इन दिस क्षिप्रम हि मानुषे लोके, इन ह्यूमन सोसाइटी पीपल गेट क्विक रिजल्ट. सिद्धिर भवति कर्मजा, सिद्धिर भवति, सो दे गेट परफेक्शन कर्मजा, फ्रॉम कर्म क्विकली. सो प्रभुपाद, सो कृष्णा एक्सप्लेन्स, व्हाई डू पीपल गेट अट्रैक्टेड टू हिम, बिकॉज पीपल, व्हाई डू पीपल गेट अट्रैक्टेड टू वर्शिप द डेमी, वर्शिपिंग द डेमी गॉड्स, बिकॉज दे गेट क्विक रिजल्ट. So how does one get quick results worshipping demigod? Just like Lord Shiva is called as Ashutosh. Ashutosh means one who is, Ashu is quickly, Tosh is satisfied, one who is quickly satisfied. So generally, if somebody does some rituals for worshipping the demigods give the results. Because demigod worship is like a contract. So if the worshipper does a particular set of rituals, the demigod is obliged to give the results. And so sometimes the child wants a sweet. And the child has got teeth which are likely to get spoiled. So the mother says, no, you should not take sweets. You should not take, no, don't take sweets. You make sure that you have your treatment properly. And later on, I'll give you special sweets. But first, don't take sweets. And the child says, no, I want sweets. And what the child does? Mother says, yes, I'll give you sweets, but first you get cured, then I'll give you. And I'll cook special sweets for you. Mother says, if you take chocolate, your teeth will get spoiled. I'll cook some other special sweets, which will not get your teeth spoiled. So child says, no, I want sweets right now. I want chocolate. So the chocolate child says, take some money from somewhere, in the pocket money, or takes from the pocket of the father, and then goes to shopkeeper and says, here is the money, give me chocolates. Give me 100 chocolates. And then just use the money and get the chocolates. So that's basically a business. So generally, when we worship the devatas, people do it in the mode of a business. In the mode of a business means that they are doing it for the sake of not primarily any spiritual advancement, it is just for getting their material desires fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And Krishna, he will also fulfill our material desires. Just as, it's not that the mother doesn't want the child to eat sweets, but the mother also wants that the child's health not get spoiled. So Krishna doesn't want that we have to be materially starved and poverty stricken. No, Krishna wants us to have whatever material things we need. But he doesn't want us to get so obsessed in material things that we hurt ourselves, that we hurt our spiritual prospects. That's why he will give things to us, but he may give them slowly, in a way that doesn't increase our illusion. So therefore, people, because they want quick results, they don't want purification, they just want quick results. That's why, kshipram hi manushe loke, they get those quick results and they worship the devatas. The Prabhupada expands the semantic scope. Semantic scope means, the semantics refers to meanings. Semantic scope means the range of meaning. So, iha devataha, Krishna uses it to refer to the devatas. Iha, it refers to in this world. So, there are devatas in this world and people worship them. So, Prabhupada explained that devata in this context can refer even to other materialistic people. You know, some people may do some bootlicking of a politician. Just become a yes man for that politician. Oh, you're so great, you're this, you're that. Flatter that person and then get something out of that person. So people may do that because they feel that kshipramimanushiluk. If I flatter the politician, if I flatter some big business person, then from that I will get so many things. I'll get this, I'll get that. And I don't want these things. So that way, one can get the results. So now that is how actually we see ajanta. Most of the worship happens because people get something fruitive. So, for example, there is some god man whom his followers believe to be God. And then they write a book, 101 Reasons Why So and So Person is God. And if you see, what are the 101 reasons? Basically, they are 101 stories of apparently miraculous fulfillment of prayers. They say, oh, so and so person was having, his daughter was sick. And the doctor says it's incurable. And then They went to that god man and then they started chanting his mantras. They started chanting his mantras, they prayed, and the patient was miraculously cured. Or they say that, oh, this person was not passing in the exam, and the person
prayed to that so-and-so Baba, and then what happened? The person passed the exams. So basically, they said that this is how all these stories, from the experience of their worshippers, you know that they are God, that person is God. Now, this is actually a simple error of logic. Actually, there are 101 stories like that, but there are probably 10,000 stories, or maybe 1,000 stories, or more, whatever number, of people who were in similar situations, who prayed and did not get anything. But when they did not get anything, the prayers don't enter the books. So they tell the stories where they succeed. And even if you think by pure statistics, you know, statistics by itself, you know, some people, there are medically miraculous cures happen. And statistically, some people who are not doing so well, if they feel that, oh, I'm being blessed, I'm getting some power, then they study better. They get marks also by that. So, this idea, first of all, even from the logical point of view, it is not sound. And scriptural point of view, definitely it is not sound. So, if you choose an object of worship based on just whether I get quick results or not, then I'll get quick results, but the results will quickly go away also. At the end, when I die, what will I be carrying with me? None of these results will carry with me. I'll just carry my karma with me. Therefore, Krishna says that this is not a recommended form of worship. Those who are short-sighted, children are short-sighted. They can't think about their career. They can't think of the long term. They say, I just want to play right now. So like that, people who are short-sighted, they can think only in this terms of this lifetime. I want this, I want that, I want that. And they can't think of anything more. So people who are short-sighted like that, they can't practice spiritual life very seriously. And even if they practice some sort of piety, that is for iha devataha. They direct it towards some worshipful object in this world and they get some results from that. So now Prabhupada explains, Krishna explains that, okay, for such people, how will they get elevated? I have created a system. A system by which progressively, step by step, people can get elevated. So what is that system? That is the Varanashram system. Chatur Varanyam Maya Srishtam Unakarma Vibhagashaha Tasya Kartaram Apimam Vidya Kartaram Avyam. So Chatur Varanyam, there are four Varanas, Maya Srishtam. By me, they are created. Guna karma vibhagashaha is divided according to guna and karma. And then, tasya kartaram apimam. Although I am the doer, still know that I am the non-doer, being unchangeable. So there, this every line of this verse is very significant. So first is chatur varana, the four varanas. It is maya srishtam. It is created by me. What does it mean, maya srishtam? Actually, whatever is created by Krishna is natural. It is innate. It is there everywhere. So now we may say that in America and Europe, we don't have the caste system as the word is used nowadays. But actually, we will see these four, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, they are not just caste by designation. They are basically four human types. Four human types. And we find these four human types in all societies. There are the intellectuals, there are the Brahmanas, there are the administrators, there are the Kshatriyas, there are the mercantile community, there are the Vaishyas, and the general assistants, the laborers, and the Shudras. So in every society we will find this. What to speak of every society? In a classroom we will find it. In a classroom, there are some students who will just sit right in the front bench and eager to study and learn. Some other students, whenever there is something organizing is to be done, okay, they will become class monitors and say, okay, we're going for this picnic, so please stand in the queue. You'll be first, and they will make the arrangements, organize. This is Kshatriya. So sitting first and learning, there are Brahmanas. And then, there will be some children who will say that, okay, you know, some child will say, you know, there's a new pencil just come. Or, you know, this new pen has come. A pen come, pencil come, eraser, everything is there in one only. Something like some new high-tech product has come, and show it. Can you give it to me? Can you give it to me also? So, yes, I'll give it to you. How much? They'll say, okay, it's 50 rupees. Okay. A person gets it for 30 rupees from the shop and gives it for 50 rupees. And in the class only, the person makes a tidy profit. So what happens is that's Vaishya mentality. Even the children, it is there. And the Shudras, the children who say, for example, and the class is going on. He's maybe sitting in the back bench, nodding off to sleep, getting bored. But as soon as the class gets over and the teacher goes out, they'll get up, come from the last bench, clean the blackboard, touch the blackboard, and come back and go and sleep again. They're ready to do some sort of, they're not necessarily insincere, but yes, they don't have the inclination to study, but they want to contribute in some way or the other. So, they contribute with some physical activity. So, actually, this is just a simple understanding. But this is the basic division of labor that is there in every enterprise. So, in a factory also, there is R&D, in every company in industry, there are some people who do R&D. So, we could roughly equate them with the Brahmana. There are people who do admin. They are the Kshatriyas. Then there are the people who do the marketing, selling, generation of revenues. They are the Vaishyas. They are concerned with money. And then there are the people who are generally working. There are the peons, there are the coolies, there are the general assistants. So they are all Shudra. They are all be like Shudra. So basically, this categorization is there everywhere. Maya Srishtam. So Chatur Varanyam. These four divisions. Let's try to understand this Varanashram a little bit more clearly. So in the Varanashram, what do we have? Yeah. So what does Varanashram actually do? Varanashram provides a social structure for spiritual advancement. How does it provide? I'll explain this. So, social structure for spiritual advancement. What does that mean? That means that actually for most people, spiritual advancement is, okay, there is God and I have to become make spiritual advancement. I have to devote myself, I have to purify myself. And mostly it's an individual struggle. So, if that individual struggle is supported by a social structure, then the struggle becomes lesser and the fruit comes more easily. That means, how do I practice spiritual life? What do I do? So when there is a social supporting social system, just like if a student wants to study, if a student wants to become a doctor, and if there is no social structure to support, there is no college, there are no professors, there is no system of education and training, then the person says, okay, I only read my books. I read this book, I read that book, I read that book, and find out after reading this, so this is what I do. And then I become a doctor. It's very difficult without a social structure. Just by individual struggle to progress is difficult. But when there's social structure, things become easier. So same way applies to spiritual life. Just by reading books, just by chant, doing some meditation, to make spiritual advancement is difficult. But ashrama. So what does ashram do? Ashram provides a time-wise progression in one's spiritual commitment. A time-wise progression means when initial stage of life, brahmachari, one commits oneself a lot. Goes to the guru's ashram, stays there and practices. And then after that there is a grihastha ashram where one gets married. That time one also gets involved in the world. But with the family also one is making commitment to spirituality. And then there's vanaprastha where one starts taking off and starts focusing more on spirituality. And sannyas means one focuses primarily, if not exclusively, on spirituality. Then, while one is doing this, what does the Varana system do? Varana system provides for one's material needs in the least complicated and the most harmonious way according to one's psychophysical nature. Psychophysical refers to psycho is mind, physical is body. So, according to the nature of our mind and body, Varanashram provides engagement in the least complicated and the most harmonious way. What does it mean? Least complicated and most harmonious? See, today, when a person has to choose a career, it's such a huge spectrum. We may say this is freedom, but that freedom causes anxiety. Should I go in this direction? What should I do with my life? It's so complex. It causes so much anxiety. What career should I choose in my life? So, it becomes very complicated. But if a person is in the traditional Varanashram system, then when the Brahmana and Brahmani unite in proper Brahminical consciousness, then a soul with Brahminical inclinations is born in the family. And in that soul, also brought up in a Brahminical culture, then naturally there are innate Brahminical propensities and there are acquired Brahminical propensities. So naturally the person becomes a Brahmana. And that way the person continues on in a profession for which one is inclined and one has also been incultured for that. One has been brought up in a culture which helps one to do that. So one has a head start over competition because from childhood itself one has been practicing Brahminical life. The same applies with, say, somebody the cobbler. Then if from childhood itself the person has been trained in being a cobbler, then it's much easier for the person to go on, to proceed forward in life. So in the least complicated and most harmonious way. Am I most harmonious? Because many times, because of peer pressure, people choose careers that are not good for them, that are not according to their nature. So everybody, for example, in India, people, the professions of, say, medicine and engineering and medicine are glamorized. So everybody wants to go in that also. Now their nature may not be that. Their nature may be to be artist. Their nature may be to a doctor. But they do, sorry, no, their nature may be to an artist or a painter or a musician or a photographer. But they can't choose that because they're too caught up by the in the peer pressure. So then when they get into it, what they're doing is not harmonious with their nature. And that's why, firstly, they can't do it well. And secondly, they're not satisfied while doing it. So the whole principle of Varnashram is not based on just mere fiat. Fiat means this is what you have to do and nothing else. No, it's not arbitrary fiat. It is based on guna and karma. So according to one's qualities and according to one's activities, guna and karma. So guna refers to character and karma refers to competence. Just like when a person is to become a doctor, that person has to have the competence. Competence refers to person should have the skills. You know, if this person is a surgeon, a person should have the skills to be able to cut the body and extract the damaging part, and then heal the issue and heal the body also. So that competence has to be there. That is karma. But along with competence, there has to be character. That is guna. If the doctor is opening the body, they're healing one part organ, but at that time steals another organ. Maybe steals one kidney from the stomach. Then that will not do. So there has to be character as well as competence. Person, and the same applies to all professions. So guna refers to the qualities and karma refers to the activities. Now when I said earlier that these four human types are there in all societies, because Maya system is created by Krishna. But what is there is karma. Guna will not come automatically. See, in every society there will be some people who will become leaders. There are some people who will become intellectuals. What does it mean they'll become intellectuals? They are literally inclined. They are thoughtful. They will become writers. They may become opinion leaders in society, thinkers. But then, if they do not have the proper guna, then their thinking will not lead to deep spiritual conclusions, deeper or spiritual truths. They stay at the superficial level, superficial level, and they may end up writing books on atheism, materialism. They may end up writing books condemning religion. They will not be able to understand what actually is the truth and pursue that truth. Same way with Kshatriyas. In every society, there will be some administrators. Now, from a material point of view, they may be good administrators also. They have the karma to be administrators, but to develop the guna, one requires training. One requires training in overall understanding the philosophical purpose of life. So if the Kshatriyas understand, yes, the ultimate goal of life is to go back to God, then they don't become too attached to their kingdoms, to their possessions and positions. And they are able to guide their subjects in a caring way, in a responsible way, in a non-exploitative way, in a parental way. So this is guna and karma. When both are taken care of, then there is harmonious progress. And then now let's look at the last. Tasya kartaram api maam vidya kartaram avyam. So Krishna is saying tasya kartaram api maam. I am the maker of the system. So what does it mean when he says I am the maker? What it essentially means is that I have made these divisions. But then vidya kartaram avyam. But know that I am not the doer. What does he say? Why does he say I am not the doer? That means that he has not put people in these various places. It is not that Krishna has made somebody to be a Shudra and Krishna has made somebody to be a Vaishya. Actually, those people, based on the way they have acted in the past, as a reaction to their karma, they have been put in different places. So Krishna is not discriminating. Krishna is simply rewarding according to how people act. Krishna is not partial. Krishna is reciprocal. He doesn't discriminate. I like this person, so I'll make that person the Brahmana. I don't like that person, move that person to Shudra. No. Based on the kind of psychophysical nature they have cultivated, they have lived in a particular life, accordingly, they get the next life. So, vidhi akartaram avyam, I am not the doer. Sometimes, in some schools, there are, say, for 10th standard, there are divisions, A, B, C, D. All the top students, all the high class students, they are put in A. And then they get the best teachers also over there. And then those students who are dull, those who are not very interested in studies, those whose performance has been very poor in the previous classes, they are put in D. So like that, there are divisions, say, A, B, C, D. So now, is the school administration responsible for this division? Oh, there's a division for high class students, a D division for low, for not so good, mediocre students. The school has created that. So it's a kartaram. It might say a kartaram. Why? Because the school doesn't deliberately put some student there. I don't like you, I'll put you there. No. What the school does is, okay, the exams are there based on what kind of performance a person has done, then the students are put in different places. So, the judge may give a reward to some persons and may punish certain persons. Judge is not being judgmental in the sense of being partial, but judge is being simply reciprocal. Okay, this person has performed, has done something, deserves some compensation for whatever has happened, so then give some compensation, give some money, and some person needs punishment, that person is given punishment accordingly. Tasya kartaram apma vidya kartaram avyayam. So, Krishna says, I am not the doer. I am unchangeable. I am unchangeable means, I don't get directly involved in this. I do not take sides here. He said, judge doesn't take sides. Krishna is transcending, transcendent doesn't take sides. He has created the system of Varnashram by which people can become gradually elevated. And that is what he helps people do through the progression of Varnashram. So by acting in their according to their Varna and Ashram, people can get gradually elevated. So how that will happen, Krishna will talk about in the next verses. And we'll discuss in our next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.